to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today, how sun-exposed oyster mushrooms helps patients fight tuberculosis, from the University of Hohenheim in Germany. We have about 12 other important health stories. Then we're going to go to your calls and see what's on your mind. For those of you who've called our voice line, and at 862-800-6805 and left a question or a comment, I'll be addressing those. And then I really have a lot of respect for John Stewart's testimony before Congress concerning the plight of 9/11 first responders. I'm going to play it. I think we should. This is recent, and I believe this week. So we need to keep in mind those people who are still suffering, because it takes years sometimes for a toxin to manifest into a disease. So I'm going to play that. Then we're going back to our poverty segment, and this is why millennials are struggling to pay their rent. It's a short 2-minute clip. And then for those who think, well, it's just a conspiracy theory to assume that the CDC would cover up information that showed the MMR vaccine to be dangerous, actually causing autism. Well, today we're going to have Representative Bill Posey from Florida, who was given over 100,000 documents from the CDC without the CDC's knowledge. And he was given it to him by Dr. William Thompson, one of the leading vaccine doctors, scientists at the CDC. He's going to read them in to the congressional record. It's not long. It's about 5 minutes. So don't take my word for it. You will hear absolute, irrefutable, incontrovertible proof with prima facie evidence and exculpatory evidence that the CDC scientist, from top to bottom, clear up to the director, knew that the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, was causing autism in African-American children 36 months and younger by up to 324% increase. They covered it up. He will describe how they covered it up. Now, you cannot sue the government. You must get its permission to sue it, and it rarely gives it. And you cannot sue people who work for the government unless what they do is outside of the protections of indemnification that the government provides. For example, if you're the Attorney General or the head of the Justice Department, like Loretta Lynch, and or you're even the President of the United States, like Barack Obama, if you commit a crime that can be proven to be a crime, premeditated, then you can be sued. You can be indicted. You can go before a grand jury. You can go to jail. So why aren't any of these officials being held accountable? Why is this not a major news story? You would think that at least what I've supported for most of my life, the progressive liberal causes, and the, if you go back to the historical conservative causes and the historical liberal causes, they're very common. It is what we've made with them out of identity politics that have perverted both. But both conservatives and liberals who are identifying from the traditional point of view should say this should not be allowed. The media should cover this story completely and objectively and fair-mindedly and report on the facts. So we're going to cover that. And Bill Posey, Representative Posey, will be talking to the Congressional Record today, but the entirety of Congress went against him. They refused to have any open hearings or even closed hearings, because the last thing in the world they want is for a member of the CDC's vaccine investigation team to say, yes, we had proof that vaccines, the MMR vaccine in particular, can cause autism, especially in African Americans, and we hid it. First, that would make them culpable. That would be crimes against humanity, because it's not an individual, it's an entire race. It would also be fall under racial crimes, because it's It's sectioning off a whole segment of the American population, African Americans. This goes back to the Tuskegee experiments. This goes back to Jim Crow rules. This goes back to post-Civil War Reformation and how all of the opportunities, once they were freed, were being taken away and denied them. This is as bad as it gets. This is institutional racism. And it was approved from the President of the United States down because the top people in the top agencies knew what was going on. So you're going to hear about it today. Then ask yourself this, why haven't I heard this on anyone else's radio program, newspaper, blog post? Also today, a commentary. One, I will give you one, on our freedoms, and also John Whitehead from Global Research on omnipresent surveillance state, Orwell's 1984 is no longer fiction. And I'll be adding on to that. And I don't know how much more time we have, but I have two more comments. And then I have an answer, partly for why we're never going to know the truth about vaccines causing autism. This is from Grip Post. This is new. Pharma and insurance gave $43 million to 129 House Democrats not backing Medicare for All. So if you want to know why we don't have Medicare for All, why don't you ask the 129 Democrats who received $43 million in what amounts to pay for play and bribes so that they would keep the thumb on the scale against single-payer health care, which we should have. Now, how many of those same pharmaceutical companies gave Democrats and Republicans large amounts of money and said, don't allow any hearings where anyone testifies under oath from the CDC, especially Dr. Thompson, because Thompson knew about Verostratin. And if you're going to open up hearings about the CDC, you've got to open up hearings about Verostratin that preceded the CDC with 220,000 children's records examined, showing a statistically significant increase in autism after taking the MMR vaccine. So you got two studies, both involving the CDC, both covered up, Verostratin and the CDC, and no one's reporting it. We will. And at a time when YouTube is cleansing all of its documentaries, all of its films on anti-vaccines, as is Facebook and Google. That's our program, so let's get started. We're going to start with always the latest on health and healing. And it's about tuberculosis. And it remains one of the deadliest infectious diseases in low-income countries, even in Los Angeles County. In fact, there are diseases now manifesting in Los Angeles that you only have in third world countries where there's absolute abject poverty and no sanitation. This is downtown Los Angeles. In fact, in my new film, you'll see 61 straight streets, every single block on both sides, nothing but tents, defecation, hypodermic needles, people with mental problems, and people who at one time had a living standard and had the house and or apartment, and now they're here. And just throwing a pot of money, $1 billion, doesn't change that. Yes, there have been some houses. They've rehabilitated some housing projects for about $4,000 or $5,000. But in any given night, minimally, you've got about 60,000 homeless people just in Los Angeles. And that's the minimum number. So at the rate they're going and the rate they're spending money, they're never going to do anything. So I'm just going to take an aside for a moment and give a few suggestions. Why not think of it differently? First, don't put all homelessness together. It would be wrong. Break it into different categories, because only by breaking it into categories can you see what are the actual underlying problems and how can I help these people to get out of homelessness. You have to deal with those who had debt that they could not pay for whatever reason, a mortgage that was underwater, they lost their home, they were foreclosed on. But also you have to look at drug addiction. And drug addiction coming from poverty when they went on the streets, and drug addiction preceding going on the streets. You have to look at mental conditions. Clearly, there are individuals who are not mentally competent, cannot take care of themselves. So why would you put the police in a position with no training whatsoever to handle people with mental problems? Do you remember a few years ago there was a guy in Brooklyn who was naked out on the little roof above his steps, and the police came and shot him, killed him? You don't shoot an unarmed, naked person. That person represents, of course, they would have all gotten up because their union, of course, is going to come forward and say, we feel threatened. Then stop being a cop if you feel threatened. You've got body armor on. You've got tasers. You've got high caliber weapons. You've got batons. You've got backup. You've got radios. You're shielded. You have hoods. You have gloves. You have boots. You're dressed as if you're going into an Afghan village with the Taliban. And you're up against a guy with a knife. Have you ever heard shooting someone in the leg? But non-fatal shot. Why is every shot a fatal shot, a kill shot? Wow. It's just appalling. So these are the first line. This is the what they call the tip of the spear. You don't send the police in to police in these areas because this is not a drug problem. It's not just a mental illness problem. It's not just an abject poverty problem. It is a societal problem, and society helped cause this because it was society that stood back and allowed predatory capitalism to create and exploit liars' loans for homes and giving people credit cards who they knew from their credit history and their savings they could not pay it back. There's 100 million Americans that could not come up with $1,500 in 30 days. So why do these 100 million people have credit cards that if they miss a payment, the interest goes from 18% to up around 48%? If they keep missing it or only give partial payments or miss payments, it can go up even higher. And therefore, they're going to pay back far more than what they ever borrowed in the first place or purchased in the first place. That's a societal problem where you're knowingly putting people in a premeditated position to profit off other people's losses. You're exploiting them. That's called vulture capitalism. That's the singer who's on the cabinet. That's the people who love it when there's a country that defaults on their loans, loves it when there's a hurricane in Puerto Rico, because they're going to exploit that country in its hour of need. Those are the people you put into a cabinet. Whoa. Those are the people that you allow to be policymakers. And where were the people of Los Angeles when this was starting? Now, I used to go to Los Angeles a lot because I used to appear on the ABC show out there with Regis Philbin a lot. And I would walk down the streets. I loved walking down all the old streets, looking at unique stores, one store with old antique film posters, go in and browse them. All that area now is just ghettoed, and it goes out of the town and down towards Malibu. So you have green zones. Malibu's a green zone. They won't allow any of that. Beverly Hills, Bel Air, Westwood. They're different, all down the same stupid little mountain, ending with the Griffin Park and the observatory up there. Great observatory, if you've never been there. I used to meditate just going there at night. When it was quiet, nobody was around, and I would just sit out there remembering the movie Rebel Without a Cause with James Dean in the final scenes, and I would just sit there and look out at all the twinkling lights over the city. It was just magical. In any case, everywhere you look now, you see tents or cardboard boxes. So this is not just about the persons on the street. Pull back far enough and see how did they get there and what role did the rest of us play, either in omission or commission. So what could be a solution? I'll give you a simple one. Occam's razor. Take a look at what's really the truth and how easy and quickly you can get to it. Never confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. Never. And we do just the opposite. No matter how simple a solution is, we make it extraordinarily complicated to give ourselves an excuse why we can't do it today or maybe ever. It's like global warming. So here's what we do. And I've done a model of this, and I'm happy to work with anyone, city planners, anyone. And I'll show you where it works. First and foremost, the city and the state and the federal government owns large tracts of land just outside of Los Angeles. Take a tract of land. even a beautiful track overlooking the ocean. And there you build three different large compounds, and you build them nicely. First, you use local labor. You use local contractors, subcontractors, electricians, masons, plumbers, glazers. You use the people who could use the work. That'll put a lot of people to work. Secondly, you get the oversight by community leaders and local experts like local builders and architects. You keep the developers out of the picture, and you keep politicians who would otherwise make sure that an uncle, aunt, someone associated with them would get a contract. You keep these parasites out. Now, in these you build them large enough to accommodate 100,000 people. You give them, based upon the compound, families, single units, and even senior citizen units, because there are going to be special needs. In each unit, you have a security. You have a nonviolent, unarmed security team that is able to deal with arguments and fights, and so that at least people know their standards. You cannot take the mindset from the street into this, because you'll just destroy it. You'll ghettoize it, and it's been done too many times. There has to be a transition, and people have to be prepared for this transition. There's a clinic in every one of these. There's a psychological clinic offering humanistic, not pharmaceutical approaches to depression, anxiety, etc. You help people deal with their problems. One unit is reserved just one of these buildings, and you make it nice. You make it look like, you could do it like a Mediterranean village, where you can do it in steps down, so you know you can accommodate people and still maintain a beautiful aesthetic. Something would look like a gorgeous gated community, but it's not. It's for the poor. It's not a reversal of roles, where the poor actually get to live in a nice environment. You have community gardens, where a requirement, you cannot live here unless you're going to work in the garden. It's like a co-op. You have to contribute something. You're not just going to be a deadbeat who has failed at something in life and bring your soul here and say, feed me, clothe me, help me. That doesn't work in today's world. If you're a child, a young person, yes. If you're a senior citizen, incapacitated, yes. If you're mental problems, yes. Then you need 100% help. But we have to have people who also realize they're given a second chance of life. There's going to be schooling for people, career schooling, trade schooling. They're going to learn trades other than their own, because maybe they stick too long in the same career that no longer is there. So there's not going to be work, whether they're living at home or not. There's not going to be work. So you have career counselors and schools and classes that are free that people take every day to process the next step in their life. You have a health clinic for them, so that if they have illnesses, they're treated. Gangrene is common. Diabetes is common. Malnutrition is common. Heavy metal toxicity, environmental sensitivity is common. Septicemia is rampant, especially with drug addicts. And you bring in, and I can provide you, because I was head of addiction control at Trafalgar Hospital for a long time, and my program worked better than any other that we had in the city, including the methadone clinics. So you can get people off the drugs without giving them another drug like methadone. You can clean them up. You got the counseling, the careerist. You've got a community kitchen where people can go to each day and have healthy meals cooked. In fact, it would actually be preferable to begin with, because most people are living off junk food, and junk food itself is a toxicant to the body and the mind. Now, as you have community gardens and you have sports that people can go out if they want to play tennis, they want to shoot some basketball, they want to kick some soccer balls, they'll have the opportunity to do that. They'll have clean rooms to sleep in. They'll have a shower. They'll have bed. They'll have access to the internet. But they've got to contribute. They've got to have so many hours a day, they must take classes, they must be preparing themselves for the next step in life. So when they commit themselves to giving back to the gift they've been given by the citizens, then it's an honest and honorable exchange. We're giving you a chance. We're not judging you. We're not judging how you got here, why you're drug addicted. We're going to get you healthy in body, mind, and spirit so you can reenter society, and you give them a reasonable period of time to do that, a year to 2 years. So in a year to 2 years, you can get someone up, and you can get them on their feet, you can help them. Now you put satellite cities like this around the United States, and these are much less expensive to build, much less expensive to maintain, and they also become self-maintaining because you can have arts and craft centers. You can have many of the people who are homeless begin to share their unique talents, and you can have crafts fairs that bring in income. You can have community gardens that help pay for a lot of their food. You can have sprout houses, microgreens, dehydrated freezing foods, and you can have a proper nutritionist, a holistic nutritionist dietitian who can select the foods that are brought in and prepare the meals that are actually enhancing people's well-being. And so with the psychological counseling that's humanistic, with the medical help that is holistic, with a sociologist and a psychoanalyst who are helping a person deal with life issues and giving them a safe place where they're not going to be worrying about their stuff being stolen or they're being arrested by the police, then you give them a chance. That's all you can do is give them a chance. What they do with that is up to them. Some will fail. Some will succeed. And at least they know that society cared enough about me to give me a second chance. Isn't that a better way than just throwing money into a few apartments downtown and trying to put in another toilet? In Los Angeles, I filmed, there's one toilet for 3,000 homeless people. Good luck trying to use that toilet. When it's not overflowing and stopped up, you know, there's a long line. So now, that's just a non-essential band-aid. That's a political, typical political solution. That would be something I would expect coming out of a Pacifica, you know, a local board meeting where it's not a meeting to help anyone. It's gladiators arming up and just assaulting each other and using words as if they were armor. What a ridiculous over-democratization with no object of helping anybody, the object of power. And that's what you have in a lot of these town councils. So, this has nothing to do with politics. It has everything to do with reestablishing a humanistic value to a sentient being. And this you could do, everything I just mentioned, you could do with that same $1 billion a year. Now you get permanent housing for 100,000 people. So that's, and the land can be donated. And the government and corporations can be contributing and get a 2-to-1 tax write-off. That reminds me, the dumbest thing in the world is our tax system. It couldn't be any dumber. First of all, it should be abolished entirely. Our IRS should be abolished entirely. The Federal Reserve should certainly be abolished. It's totally corrupt. But what you should have is one corporate tax for individuals who are their own limited liability corporations and major corporations like Facebook. Everyone should have to pay mandated, no exceptions, no reductions and deductions, 20% of their total income. That's it, 20%. That's money we do not get now because none of the rich people or rich corporations pay any taxes whatsoever in most cases. So this way, we'd have a constant flow. But for these special and unique homeless projects, and I wouldn't call them a homeless project, I would call it a starting over project, new beginnings. You give us a dollar and you get to deduct two on your personal income tax. Well, think of the citizens would love that. At least we know that the money would be going into helping people build something that will be sustainable instead of the military-industrial complex getting 56 to 58 cents out of every dollar that we spend in taxes, at least those who spend money in taxes. So that is what I would suggest. And that's just the beginning. I have all kinds of other ideas on that. And to see if it's going to work, I'm starting one myself. We're breaking ground in about 2 months. It'll be done in 4 months. You heard me right. 4 months, the entire project will be finished from beginning to end. It won't be with a lot of people. I'm doing it as a test to show what is possible, how it can be completely self-sustaining. I won't say more than that. When it's open and it's filled and it's working and I'm filming the people changing their lives after 6 months, I'll then present that. I'll have a premiere over the internet of a live stream from the location showing you. Same with the Veterans Village. The Veterans Village is, we're actually in the process now of starting to interview veterans to see which ones we believe we can help and who want to help themselves. And I'm also interviewing for Sergeant Majors. These are the tough guys, no nonsense, dedicated 100% to helping the soldiers around them. These would be a retired Sergeant Major who would help maintain discipline and focus and camaraderie among the homeless vets. So I'm doing that at the same time. So a whole lot's happening, and you'll hear about it when it's all done. Just a suggestion. Anyhow, back to the point. Tuberculosis is happening where you have poverty, no sanitation, you've got rats, you've got human vermin everywhere in these homeless areas. And now there's a big study today showing that rats are going into all the major cities, especially with global warming. So, with tuberculosis being one of the deadliest infections, affecting almost 1.6 million people dying every year from the disease, they found that there is a natural solution, natural non-toxic. And this was through the American Society of Nutrition's annual meeting. They presented a paper about how vitamin D induces the body to form an antimicrobial compound that attacks the bacteria that's the cause of tuberculosis. So sun exposure can boost a person's vitamin D levels, but also a lot of places people don't get enough vitamin D. But then they found the oyster mushroom, O-Y-S-T-E-R, the oyster mushroom. You can buy it anywhere. It's inexpensive. It's safe. It's readily available. It's a great source of vitamin D, easily absorbed in the body. And also you get the oyster mushrooms that have been out in the sun, and that's good. And what's in the oyster are chemicals that also help with tuberculosis. Just something to share. From Harvard University and Purdue University comes research that when you eat your protein from a plant source like pea protein, rice protein, barley protein, soy protein, that it reduced the chance of developing cardiovascular disease. Okay, that's good. From 20 to 30 grams a day. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. And it's a whole lot healthier and a whole lot cheaper than the disease-producing protein of red meat or dairy, plant protein. And if you're not getting a good night's sleep, according to the latest study published through the American Society of Nutrition, it might be because you're deficient in nutrients. They're finding that a lot of people are deficient in simple nutrients like vitamin A, B1, B3, and vitamin D, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, and zinc. You need those. Those are easy to get. And if you don't, it can cause problems with your sleeping. Also, you've heard me talking about the power of mindfulness meditation. Oregon State University and Syracuse University and University of Tennessee, the three together, did some research and found out that 10 minutes of mindfulness exercises like meditation can help your brain recharge substantially. It would be like getting an extra 45 minutes of extra sleep a day. Just 10 minutes a day of mindful meditation. Also, there was new research on vitamin D and estradiol helps guard against heart disease, stroke, and diabetes from the North American Menopause Association. We know that by exercising, losing weight to your normal weight, and lowering your body mass index, by taking a full spectrum of nutrients, including vitamin D, vitamin A, B-complex, you can rebalance your estrogen levels. Stress management also helps with that, and that helps protect your heart. And you've heard me mention many times, you can't be overweight and be healthy. Well, this adds to that. University of Glasgow. The results of a study presented at the annual European Congress of Rheumatology demonstrates significant correlation between body mass index and disease severity in arthritis. So it means body mass index is fat belly, fat thighs. So the more overweight you are, the more severe becomes the inflammatory conditions. and from the National Taiwan University, published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine, comes a study about the Antrodia, A-N-T-R-O-D-I-A, Cinnamomea mushroom. This is a mushroom. It protects against hepatic injury and inflammation. That's good. And drinking alcohol, even at conception, damages placenta development. It's University of Queensland. So no alcohol of any kind in any amount whatsoever, or you're going to damage your developing fetus. That was published in this peer reviewed journal, Development. And also, for men who are drinking beer, there's a problem, and the problem is phytoestrogens. There's new studies showing that men who drink beer have so-called man boobs in female traits. Yeah, all kinds of problems start to happen with your testicles, shrinking, and liver disease. And this is because of the phytoestrogens that are getting into the beer. So, no, shouldn't be drinking it anyhow. And from Harvard University, our final study says that 94 million premature deaths could be prevented with simply following three protocols. Just three protocols. They include lowering your blood pressure. That would be 39 million people's lives saved. Cutting your sodium intake, we're eating too much salt. That could save 40 million lives. Yeah. And also eliminating trans fats, French fries, potato chips, pretzels. And that could save almost 15 million lives. Three simple things. Oh, I might mention, I passed a ginkgo tree. You can always tell. Smells like vomit in the fall. And you'll generally see some form of Asian person walking around picking them up. I see it all the time in Central Park. The average person just thinks someone got sick. No, those are the ginkgo biloba. And it can extend your life. Ginkgo, G-I-N-G-K-O, biloba, B-I-L-O-B-A, it is called the living fossil. And it does a whole lot of good. Alzheimer's? Yeah. It is good for aging and allergies, conjunctivitis, aluminum toxicity, ALS, arterial thickening, atherosclerosis, asthma, attention deficit disorder, autism. Does a whole lot of good. So make sure that you're getting some ginkgo biloba. I'm Gary Null. We are 33 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to come back. Before we take a break, though, I want to thank Abby Mitchell for sending us out a consumer alert. A Dr. Martin Paul, P-A-L-L, who has researched the subject and has discovered how wireless electromagnetic frequency radiation does damage. Quote, "No longer need we proceed in the dark. We now know how wireless electromagnetic frequencies cause the whole range of biological harms being reported. We are slowly but surely destroying our human genome with wireless electromagnetic frequencies radiation, which also generates autism, infertility, Alzheimer's, and cancers. Bills of concern. The current bill that we should all be calling and meeting up there is New York Senate Bill S-1607, and the Assembly Bill 1503. Again, New York State Bill S-1607 and Assembly Bill 1503. And then at the federal government, there's S-3157 and S-893 in the federal legislature. We don't need smart cities. We need healthy cities. So we've got to stop 5G or it'll be too late. And thank you, Abby Mitchell, for informing us of that. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go directly into John Stewart. And I also want to mention that years ago, a gentleman, firefighter, had to retire because he was so physically disabled. He had COPD, had multiple immune deficiency conditions. And under 14 months, we were able to completely normalize his health and actually videoed him going back to the fire department, rejoining it, and going out on the truck. If there are any people in this audience who have been harmed by 9/11 first responders, please let my office know, because when I come back to the city, I'll be happy to see them. I will not charge you, and we'll give you the protocol that can help you get back your health. Because according to John Stewart, our members of Congress seem woefully indifferent to the plight of all these brave hero first responders of all types. Now to John Stewart speaking before Congress.
Thank Mr. Collins, Mr. Naylor, for putting this together. But as I sit here today, I can't help but think what an incredible metaphor this room is for the entire process that getting health care and benefits for 9/11 first responders has come to. Behind me, a filled room of 9/11 first responders, and in front of me, a nearly empty Congress. Sick and dying, they brought themselves down here to speak to no one. It's shameful. It's an embarrassment to the country, and it is a stain on this institution. And you should be ashamed of yourselves for those that aren't here, but you won't be. Because accountability doesn't appear to be something that occurs in this chamber. We don't want to be here. Lou doesn't want to be here. None of these people want to be here. But they are, and they're not here for themselves. They're here to continue fighting for what's right. Lou's going to go back for his 69th chemo. The great Ray Pfeiffer would come down here, his body riddled with cancer and pain, where he couldn't walk, and the disrespect shown to him and to the other lobbyists on this bill is utterly unacceptable. You know, I would be so angry at the latest injustice that's done to these men and women. And, you know, another business card thrown our way as a way of shooing us away, like children trick-or-treating, rather than the heroes that they are and will always be. Ray would say, calm down, Johnny, calm down. I got all the cards I need. And he would tap his pocket. Where he kept the prayer cards, 343 firefighters. The official FDNY response time to 9/11 was 5 seconds. 5 seconds. That's how long it took for FDNY, for NYPD, for Port Authority, for EMS, to respond to an urgent need from the public. 5 seconds. Hundreds died in an instant. Thousands more poured in to continue to fight for their brothers and sisters breathing problem started almost immediately, and they were told they weren't sick, they were crazy. And then, as the illnesses got worse and things became more apparent, well, okay, you're sick, but it's not from the pile. And then, when the science became irrefutable, okay, it's the pile. But this is a New York issue. I don't know if we have the money. And I'm sorry if I sound angry and undiplomatic, but I'm angry, and you should be too, and they're all angry as well, and they have every justification to be that way. There is not a person here, there is not an empty chair on that stage that didn't tweet out, never forget the heroes of 9/11. Never forget their bravery. Never forget what they did, what they gave to this country. Well, here they are. And where are they? And it would be one thing if their callous indifference and rank hypocrisy were benign, but it's not. Your indifference cost these men and women their most valuable commodity, time. It's the one thing they're running out of. This should be flipped. This hearing should be flipped. These men and women should be up on that stage, and Congress should be down here answering their questions as to why this is so damn hard and takes so damn long, and why no matter what they get, something's always pulled back and they got to come back. Mr. Johnson, you made a point earlier, and it was one that we have heard over and over again in these halls, and I couldn't help but to answer to it, which was, you said, look, you know, you guys are obviously heroes and 9/11 was a big deal, but, you know, we have a lot of stuff here to do, and, you know, we got to make sure there's money for a variety of disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, but this wasn't a hurricane, and this wasn't a tornado, and by the way, that's your job anyway. We can't fund these programs, you can. Setting aside that no American in this country should face financial ruin because of a health issue, certainly 9/11 first responders shouldn't have to decide whether to live or to have a place to live. And the idea that you can only give them 5 more years of the VCF because you're not quite sure what's going to happen 5 years from now, well, I can tell you, I'm pretty sure what's going to happen 5 years from now. More of these men and women are going to get sick, and they are going to die. And I am awfully tired of hearing that it's a 9/11 New York issue. Al-Qaeda didn't shout death to Tribeca. They attacked America, and these men and women, and their response to it, is what brought our country back. It's what gave a reeling nation a solid foundation to stand back upon, to remind us of why this country is great, of why this country is worth fighting for, and you are ignoring them. And you can end it tomorrow. Why this bill isn't unanimous consent and a standalone issue is beyond my comprehension. And I have yet to hear a reasonable explanation for why. It'll get stuck in some transportation bill or some appropriations bill and get sent over to the Senate.
Very well said, John Stewart. It needed to be said, and it needs to be said on so many levels. We do not have these type of hearings for all the homeless people in America. I'm not talking about the people who are drug addicts. I'm not talking about the people who have mental problems. I'm talking about the people, the average human being who contributed to society as school teachers, working in offices, working in factories today who are homeless. 1 in 7 senior citizens is in dire poverty. What about half of all college teachers? Half are adjunct professors. I'm an adjunct professor. I know what I'm talking about. They are sleeping in their cars. They're having to work at all kinds of jobs just to make ends meet, and yet their number one joy in life is helping young students learn an area of their expertise. Most of these are PhDs. And that's how we treat the most learned, many of the most gifted, and the most caring, the most nurturing, the people who have no political or ideological agenda, just want to see that people are taught critical skills and their own mental development. We have them sleeping in their cars because universities are so greedy they don't want to pay them a living wage. Where are the hearings on that? So good for you for bringing your celebrity status as an opinion leader on behalf of all of the victims of 9/11. Now I'm going to close out the program today by sharing my ongoing concerns and those of John Whitehead and many others, Julian Assange. There's Chris Hedges, Abby Martin. Abby, you'll hear tomorrow on this program. Because there are people who have committed their lives to social issues, informing us. And I do not believe that we are yet in a mindset, because of all of our distractions and all of our other responsibilities, to appreciate how close we are to a complete, total police state. Wasn't it George Orwell who said you had to live from habit that became instinct in the assumption that every sound you made was overheard and except in darkness every movement scrutinized? That was George Orwell. And he was dying when he went to that small little Scottish island, went to an old farmhouse. And by the way, he was self-sufficient. He wrote to his friends about how he was fishing and hunting and living off the land and growing a vegetable garden. He needed a place. He needed a respite from all of his other trials and tribulations in order to write this great masterpiece, 1984. But here is the overarching idea. It's been 70 years since Orwell dying. He had a fever. He had what was called consumption at the time, bloody coughing fits, where he recused himself from the day-to-day functions to work on this important work. And what he did, he depicted an ominous rise in ubiquitous technology. We have that today. Fascism, it's bridling today. And totalitarianism, just look at our social media. Look at Facebook. Look at Google. And most importantly, look at the biggest cult in America, and in my opinion, the most dangerous, and that is Wikipedia. This is the new 1984. Who could have predicted that 70 years after Orwell's typed the final words to his dystopian novel, what was his last words? He said, he loved Big Brother. Yeah. Well, 1984 portrays a global society of total control in which people are not allowed to have thoughts that in any way disagree with the corporate state. Think now today of China, where China will actually take a picture of you. They have facial identification because everyone who goes into any part of the country now, their eyes are scanned when they go through an airport and their facial recognition, but it's in a central database, the most comprehensive in the world. And so if you jaywalk within 10 seconds, you are charged for that jaywalking, and then immediately your photograph is put out on all social media in the immediate area to shame you. If you have not lived by certain social standards of accepting the dominance of the political communist ideology, you're shamed. You get on an airplane, every single person on the airplane will have a notice posted on their cell phone that you are seating in C3A and you are not a good citizen. And they prevented 23 plus million people from even being able to travel on planes. That's how much that dystopian energy has immersed itself into that culture. There's an interesting piece, I don't have time to go into it today, about how they just found that the former President Lula of Brazil was put into prison on false charges, and the prosecutors and the judge all conspired together. The Intercept's Glenn Greenwald printed that this morning. I'm going to share that tomorrow. So an entire society that is now taken over by this absolute thug took the People's Party person and put him in prison, not because he was corrupt, but because they did not want a reformer in power. So they destroyed him. I'll go into that tomorrow. Well, think today, Julian Assange in prison. What was his crime? Exposing corruption of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and others. So when we hear about the government or the party headed by Big Brother, who's Big Brother? Big Brother is big corporations. They control, they've captured the government. Who appears on posters everywhere with the words, Big Brother is watching you? Well, just look at all your social data. It's all captured, and they're watching you. So we've arrived way ahead of schedule into the dystopian future dreamed up not only by Orwell, but also such fiction writers as Alice Huxley, Margaret Atwood, Philip K. Dick. Who was it, or George Orwell, who said, if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. So if you don't want to hear how dangerous vaccines are, then don't listen. It's your right not to listen. It is not your right, nor the government's right, nor corporate America's right, nor the media's right, all working together to say that the person bearing that information, which is true and accurate, vaccines are dangerous, and there's no such thing as an inherently safe vaccine. Who said that? The Supreme Court said it. So now what do? They shut down the websites. They attack on Wikipedia. The people are telling you, be cautious about vaccines, even if you're pro-vaccine, because they can be dangerous. So nothing can be said against anybody or anything. This has been going on for a long time. And much like Orwell's Big Brother in 1984, the government and its corporate spies now watch our every move. And much of Huxley's A Brave New World, we are churning out a society of watchers taking pills to psychoactively stimulate our brains. And now the newest thing is these new virtual reality helmets. You put them on. They can attach non-surgically to the back of your neck and spinal column. They can give you thoughts, and they can read your thoughts. Do you really want someone reading your thoughts? Have you ever had a thought in your life, even for a fleeting second, that would be embarrassing, humiliating, or may even be considered illegal if someone had that? Did we not have Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale? The populace is now taught to know their place and their duties, to understand that they have no real rights, but would be protected up to a point if they conform, and if they think so poorly of themselves, they will accept that assigned fate and not rebel or run away. And in keeping with Philip Dick's darkly prophetic vision of a dystopian police state, which became the basis, remember, of Steven Spielberg's futuristic thriller Minority Report, we are now trapped in a world in which the government is all-seeing, all-knowing, all-powerful, and they control all the reporters from the New York Times. Have you read the pro-5G propaganda? Have you read the pro-vaccine propaganda? Have you read the pro-censorship propaganda? Have you read the collusion, and it's all collusion, and there's nothing but collusion between Russia and Donald Trump? Well, there was no collusion. Five investigations, the FBI's investigation, the Senate investigation, the House investigation, Mueller's investigation, no collusion. So why don't you put your energy on doing something positive to help the people that you once said you would help? But that wasn't the plan at all. It was destroy Trump so Clinton, the person that you know would protect you and keep the official secrets of the deep state intact, keep the power of those in positions of authority intact, would not question the security state, challenge the prices of the pharmaceutical industry, not challenge the find a war, and if there is no war to find, create a war for the military-industrial complex, create huge banking profits. That was Clinton. She threatened that if she didn't win, they would seek the the truth of all those who had supported her, the permanent state, the permanent bureaucrats, the permanent technocrats, the stay-behinds, the professionals in Washington. She was right. It's now being exposed. She'd be the central figure in the new dystopian novels. So in conclusion, our world is characterized by widespread surveillance, behavior prediction technologies, data mining, fusion centers, driverless cars, voice-controlled homes, facial recognition systems, cybugs, and drones, and predictive policing, pre-crime, aimed at capturing would-be criminals before they can do any damage. Surveillance cameras are everywhere, government agents listening on all of our telephone calls, read all your emails, political correctness, a philosophy that discourages diversity has become a guiding principle of modern society based upon the identity politics. Wasn't it George Orwell who said, "People sleep peaceably in their beds at night only because rough men stand ready to do violence on their behalf"? The courts have shredded the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. In fact, SWAT teams battering down doors without search warrants and FBI agents acting as a secret police that investigate dissenting citizens are common occurrences in contemporary America. And bodily privacy and integrity have been utterly eviscerated. We'll say, believe her, her body is her temple, she has a right to it. I agree. Oh, except if you're one of the millions of women who say, "I don't want toxicants in my body from a vaccine." Then you're anti-medicine, you're anti-science, you're a superstitious person. You should go to a recorrection women's camp. Wow. The level of hypocrisy within the women's movement is mind-numbing. Why hasn't it been called out? Who's afraid? How about everyone? And when you live in a time when everyone's afraid to utter any truth because there'll be someone who'll be offended enough to come after you, then it's time that we re-examine how much we become captive to the utopian state we now all live in. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
If you want something to play with,